Hello, good people, and welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. Alchemy of Light is a celebration and exploration of consciousness, how we feel and think, because everything begins with a feeling. And I am Jamil Graham, your host, and today I am going to be launching a new exploration and talk for the expansion that is in process here at the Alchemy of Light broadcast. The beginning in July, we will be running a two-hour broadcast, and I am knee-deep with paintbrush in hand, having so much fun producing what the new thing will be, and this is part of what will be part of the new format in some variation. It is called Earth Talk, and Earth Talk is an open dialogue celebrating the Earth and our changes relative to it. Our Earth is changing, and it is a very, very exciting and momentous experience that we are all sharing. And my intention is to introduce you all to the independent scientists, that it lives and thrives in every single one of us. Every single one of us has questions, and every single one of us has a soul that ignites when it finds new questions and new answers that leads to new questions. And my intention today is to inspire that independent scientist within each and every one of you and excite you to go out and discover for yourself what the earth changes look like, feel like, sense all around you, what is going on our planet. And it is not happening on the television, I promise. It is really happening outside, under the stars, under the sun, with the trees and the birds. Everybody is talking. Everybody is talking really, really, really loud right now. So I am going to be sharing with you my experience from my independent scientist. I am a very curious person who has been in love with this planet since I arrived. I am trained by the earth itself and by guidance from my intuition that leads me all over the place to meet many people. I study many books, read many things, and I have decided that to present this information to you, I'm going to allow myself to be an independent scientist with all of you, meaning we are all in the tank together. We're trying to figure this out, and we're enjoying not knowing. We're enjoying the questions that come up, and we are learning to listen to each other. We're learning to honor and respect every single person's knowledge and every single person's experience, regardless of where they came from, how it came to be they knew that, because in every single person, in every single breeze, in every single look of a dog or the slithering of a snake is a message, is part of this amazing tapestry that we are all here in the great gift of life to assemble and enjoy, really to enjoy this process. So as an independent scientist myself, I am going to share with you my personal growing hypothesis of what I see happening here on planet Earth. And my personal, very brief backgrounds or merit, if you will, to offer you this information has been grounded in many years outside. I am somebody who has never owned television, never had any interest in television. As soon as I moved at 9 years old to the Santa Cruz Mountains, way back when, that was a long time ago, nearly 40 years ago, I have been outside. I have had a lot of experience watching the earth, watching the trees, the flowers, the various crawling, creepy, walking things. This has been my personal passion and fascination all of my life. I have also always been a walker. I have always sought, needed for my mental health, my emotional, mental, spiritual health, to spend quite a bit of time walking. I am a walker that walks to connect. When I'm walking, I'm not power walking, you know, face forward with some little doohickey strung around my ears. I'm actually walking to commune, to listen to the breeze, to listen to the clouds, to pay attention to what's going on, because it has been my therapy. I've learned this from very young age, that it has brought me a tremendous amount of comfort. And I just can't imagine who I would be, and probably don't want to imagine who I would be if I didn't spend all the time that I do outside. So that is my background of sharing with you from my independent scientist, my observation of the Earth changes. Now, the most recent time that I have been spending outside has been here on the East Coast in Boston, Massachusetts, in the metropolis area as well. I have been spending a great deal of time since the year 2004 out on a beach north of Boston called Revere Beach. And I will share with you a little bit detail about Revere Beach. Revere Beach is a roughly three mile strip of beach that runs roughly north to south, or from the south to the north, slightly turning east. It is a flat strip that has no growth on it other than a few of the dunes. It is also a beach that was forced by the white man's hand, in that a wall was built around it so that it broke the natural tide that came and went. And there were many, many years when the water itself came all the way up to the wall quite often when the tide was high. And then when the tide was low, offered just a little stretch of beach for the beach goers. And it was a very, very popular beach in that time. I heard many, many stories of that time when the people would wait on the wall till the water went down, and then the water would go down and they'd go take their place on that bar of sand. And then they would run back up, move back up as the water rose, and go to the amusement park that used to be up there. Well, the amusement park came down. The bay itself got a major renovation. It became quite polluted. It got renovated. And then they decided to put many, many, many tons of sand on the beach itself. And this is very recent, and this will be very important as we get into this exploration, because the beach itself is now rather an artificial composite of sand that is constantly, and I mean constantly, brought in, because that wall that was built denied the natural flow. It stopped it. So the response was, now they make a beach by dumping tons and tons of sand there. Now, the dunes themselves are natural. From what I can tell, they have survived a millennia, or my version of a millennia. And I would determine that because of the migration of the birds that I have had the great joy of exploring and being present for. There are several seabirds that have migrated there over the years. The piping plovers are my favorites. They are the ones that I know the best. Those are the ones that I will speak of. And the other ones that I have known and much more intimately, and this year, is the Canadian geese that came down usually for the winter months. So I'll be speaking of those two briefly in a few minutes. Now, the earth changes that I really want to touch on today, I want to create an opportunity to begin the conversation. So if I leave you all with a lot of questions, then I have done my job. And as I said, this is the beginning of a series that's going to be continuing. So allow me to, if you're so interested, so inclined, just go for it and play with me with these ideas. And what are your own? I would love to have an unconditionally loving, supportive, mutually respectful conversation with others who are likewise curious and engaged and interested about what is going on. And all those three things are really requisite to have an ongoing dialogue. This is not about being right. I don't care about being right. I care about having the discussion, because the ultimate purpose would be to alleviate the fear of not knowing. By simply discovering, by exploring, we learn a little bit more. And the more we learn, the more we realize there is more to learn. And being right is a very vulnerable position, because you're going to be wrong eventually. And I just prefer to skip it. I just want to keep exploring and have some fun. So I'm going to intentionally throw out a lot of my thinking, a lot of ideas, and I hope you enjoy the ride. All right. So some of the major changes that I have observed are the changes in the weather patterns. And the weather patterns in specific would be here from the New England perspective are very clearly defined seasons, which were very clear up until 2 years ago, are no longer clear. So the weather pattern shifts are very dramatic. The changes in the light, the actual visible light, has changed, and is the light itself is increasing. And for that conversation, I also would like to introduce a new definition and a multi-dimensional definition of light, as light not just being a visible reality that we perceive and play with our human eyes, but light actually being an energy, an electromagnetic energy that itself is a life-creating, life-generating, life-responsive source. So the increase in the light is way beyond the human perception, though we have the incredible gift of being able to perceive it. We can actually see it, and I'll share with you how I have come to discover that with my own eyes. And there, with the changes in the weather patterns, the changes in the bird migrations have been quite noticeable. Also, the changes in the water lines. Now, there have been water lines rising and receding, okay? And there have also been ice caps melting, as well as ice caps expanding. That have found reports of both. And I do a lot of independent research. I work with the internet. I talk to a lot of people. I talk to a lot of people. Anybody who'll talk to me, I'll talk to them. And I'm not shy about knocking on doors. So I have found this information from various sources. I'm not providing you the sources because I want you to get all excited by your own independent scientist self and go find out. Go check it out yourself, okay? Then this all, of course, encapsulates this phenomena that the propagandists call global warming. And I say the propagandists because the way the global warming question has been, or not question, the way the global warming reality has been thrust on us as if, you know, to encourage us to be guilty sinners. You know, we did it. We're the ones. We screwed up this planet. We're the ones. You know, we drive these cars and we turn on these lights and you know, we're the screwballs. We did it. Well, I have to admit that I watched Mr. Al Gore's movie Inconvenient Truth all those years ago, and I admit I believed it. I did. I completely have to own that because I fell for it. And I know why I fell for it. I fell for it because I was very, very upset with the way I see humans treat the planet. The fact that human beings throw trash on the earth Not to mention all of the incredible waste of fuels and things like that, but just the very basic you and me kind of things, you know, being out in the street and, you know, watching actually parents be demonstrating, throwing gum wrappers in the train stations, you know, this kind of thing. Really, I was very, very upset about the way humans were treating the earth. So Al Gore comes along and gives me this great hammer, right? I can say, oh yeah, look guys, look how we've screwed up this planet. And I brought friends to see that movie. Look how screwed up we've made this planet. And it's all a bunch of crap. It is all a bunch of crap. I kept looking. My independent scientists didn't stop with Mr. Gore's theory. I kept looking and questioning what was going on. This is before I had a lot more access to this information. I was still very much off the internet. I didn't use internet until recently. I did my own research and I realized one question. Now, Mr. Gore is saying that all these pollutants and, you know, fuels being a major source of this global warming, my question came up was, well, why isn't he, as somebody who is apparently in government, comes from big money and all that stuff, why aren't the governments themselves more concerned about changing the way big business does business? That was the question that my intuitive scientists, my independent scientists, couldn't settle with all the presentation that I saw. So I kept asking. And basically what I realized was that he was full of crap. That whole inconvenient truth, to be, you know, if you're going to be nice, you say, well, it's an incomplete truth. But the more I look at it, there really isn't that much truth to it at all. It is an agenda that has been thrust on humanity, and it is working very well. It is convincing people to go buy ridiculously crafted light bulbs that look like little corkscrews. They are full of mercury, folks. There is nothing green about a light bulb full of mercury. But the propagandists were very successful with the global warming / Al Gore thing. They have carbon taxes. Okay, so I realized what that was all about. Well, the biggest challenge with that is to inspire the people in it to keep looking as I did, and hopefully you will, because there's so much more to the story, and it's actually a beautiful story. It's actually a beautiful story of the entire planet, the entire galaxy, the entire solar system, our entire universe entering into a phenomenal period of transformation that is such a gift from the heavens. It is really a very happy story. And we are all co-creators in that. So we all have a part to play. And that is why I'm feeling so excited to be sponsoring a new dialogue about what is going on with our Earth. Okay, so we'll start with, I want to start with this idea of integrating a quasi-meditation exercise experiment along with this. All right, so this is a very, very simple experiment, and won't take long. All you need to do is find an empty jar. Find a jar, any jar, take a minute, find a jar, okay? And then take that empty jar and fill it with about two-thirds of water and close the lid, okay? So take an empty jar, fill it with two-thirds of water, close the lid tight. Now, this little jar now, this is going to be our meditation. This is a way that I inspire my independent scientists. I get my independent scientists something to hold on to. I make a little picture. I'll pick up a rock. Sometimes it will be a rock. I'm rotating the rock, and I'm making believe it's the earth. And because I have a tangible thing in my hand, it allows my full multidimensional sensory board to be activated and engage with this, as if this rock, as if this jar actually is the earth. Okay, and that allows my process, my multisensory process, to engage, because this is not an intellectual pursuit. This is a pursuit of soul. This is a pursuit of heart. This is a pursuit of passion for life. This is not an intellectual pursuit. Intellectual prowess is not a requisite for this great game, this great journey of life that we have all chosen. So if you've got your jar now, your jar 2/3 of water. Now, what does that kind of remind you of? What does it remind you of? Okay, our planet is roughly 2/3 covered with water. The oceans, lakes, everybody, roughly 2/3 of the planet, the entire planet, is covered with water by our current understanding. Okay, now I think that's very important to always plug in our current understanding, because the point of being a scientist is to become more enlightened. So we're going to need room to have a new understanding. So in our current understanding, this is what we understand. This is our current belief. And it could change. But today, the working reality that I know and am comfortable working with, it feels okay, is that the planet itself is covered with 2/3 of water. Okay. Now that matters. And that matters a lot when we talk about certain things regarding the earth changes. So let's start there. Okay. Now I'm going to start there, and we'll start on the planet, and then we'll move out to the cosmos. Okay, so starting on the planet with our little jar full of 2/3 of water. And the reason I chose this jar is I want to use this as an example of my theory of what has caused a great deal of the changes in the weather patterns. I'm going to start with the weather patterns as an independent sovereign experience, although it's really important to remember that every single thing is interconnected. What my hypothesis is about the Earth weather patterns changing is intimately connected to my hypothesis about where the light is coming from. And all these things are intimately connected ultimately. Everything is intimately connected. There is no separation. Separation does not exist. It is not possible to be separate from anything or anybody, from the molecular to the cosmological, because we are part of an interdependent web of life way beyond our multisensory comprehension as human beings. So I'm explaining the weather patterns as a singular entity for the sake of clarity, for this simplification of identifying a single component. It's easier to look at the individual components sometimes and then put them together however that flows for you. So my hypothesis, my theory about the major player in changing the weather patterns is this. Our jar of water is our planet. And our little planet is turning counterclockwise. That's the way it turns relative to the sun. It is turning on an axis. The axis goes roughly from the north to the south poles. Now, this is a very interesting thing to imagine. Now, imagine, take your finger, one finger on top, one finger on the bottom, or somehow get your imaginary line going from the north to the south, the top to the bottom. On our planet, the north and the south do not actually create a physical bar of any kind that goes through the planet. Our axis is itself an electromagnetic force. It is a field that pulls the energy straight through the planet, joined by the polarity of the North and South Poles. So there's a lot of food for thought in that one, okay? So there is a pole. We call it the pole, North Pole, South Pole, and they are joined. The together where they meet, that line becomes the axis of the Earth. The axis of the Earth itself is what is the player with the gravitational. In our current dictionary, our current understandings, we call it gravity. It is the player with the gravity affected by the sun, our closest sun, which is one of many suns in our solar system and universe. But our closest sun is the sun that we are the most intimately connected to on this planet. It is the player that determines our rotational speed and also the angle. Now, anybody who is at all a little bit aware of the seasons knows that in the fall and in the summer, the planet tilts just slightly. And the tilt is relative to the distance of the sun. This is why we have longer days in the summer in the northern hemisphere and shorter days in the winter in the northern hemisphere. In the tilting of the planet, that is relative to the north and south poles. Now, for many, many thousands of, well, I don't know, thousands, okay, hundreds of years, I'm not going to overstep my studies. I'm sharing with you what I have studied. In my studies, several hundreds of years, there has been this very predictable tilt. North, a little wiggle here, a little wiggle there, gives us longer days in the sun in the summer, shorter days in the fall. Well, what has been happening, and now we're up to my theory part. What has been happening in the last decade is that the North and the South Poles, it turns out, shift. The North and the South Poles are constantly moving. They're always moving a little bit on the planet. And the migration, you can call it, of the North and South Poles has been really quite slight for the past several hundreds of years. Very quite slight, so it hasn't produced anything, you know, particularly sensational. But it has been moving. In the last decade, the shift in degrees has been astronomical by comparison. My research has shown me anywhere from 7 to 13 degrees. And the bulk of that shift of the North and South Poles has been in the last 2 years. Okay? Now, that means that the North and the South Poles, they do not shift on this exact straight line. Like we like to put things in our linear thinking, they don't even move the exact same degrees, but they both definitely do move. And that force is definitely still what, and my understanding, creates the axis. So they have both moved 7 to 13 degrees, the bulk of the shift happening in the last 2 years on this planet. Okay, now, with that idea in your mind, take your little jar of water and rotate it counterclockwise. That's the sun, that's the pulling the Earth, and then slightly tilt your jar of water. Okay, if you tilt your jar of water, what happens to the water line in the jar? It moves, right? It moves. Okay, now in our oceans, there is something called the Gulf Stream that runs all over the entire planet. Look it up. The Gulf Stream is a major, if not the major, player in what creates our weather patterns as we used to know them. Okay, the weather is affected by the Gulf Stream. It determines winds and temperatures. It's affected by the tilt, all of it. If you tilt that little jar and it moves, and our planet is that jar, and this is now back to reality. Okay, we're looking literally at our planet now. Imagine that is our planet. If that tilt, so slight, could affect that much water, to me, it's pretty common sense that it's going to radically affect the Gulf Stream. Because the Gulf Stream is going to be receiving new waters. The Gulf Stream is going to be discharging new waters. This, to me, explains a lot of things about why some areas would be having higher water lines and other areas would be having lower water lines. Both I have found reports about, because there is a shift. The whole planet tilted and the water itself moved. And the water we can see are the surface waters, the rising and the falling. The water we don't see is in the streams and the currents that make up the tides, make up the entire dance that's going on in the oceans. Those have been radically affected as well. Now, I'm purposely skipping a lot of some of the other stories going on because I really want to focus on our independent scientist view. As a clear mind, what does this feel like to you? Does it have any resonance? Could that possibly apply to anything logical? Okay, now that is my very basic theory of what has obstructed or changed, causing part of the change in our weather patterns. The light source I want to touch on as well, and I think that that is also probably the most important. The light source changing is going to be something we will be exploring in great depth as a human society, because the light increasing has just begun. The light will continue to increase for many, many years. And my theory about that is that we as a planet are part of a solar system, which is part of a bigger solar system, which is part of the universe. On our little planet, the ancients brought us tremendous information about the movement of the planet through the celestial bodies. The celestial bodies we can most easily recognize in the astrological work that has been done. If you've ever seen an astrological map, say you've had your chart done or seen anything like that, you see a disc with different constellations all around it representing, they're giving different what they call signs of the zodiac. Aries, Taurus, Gemini, etc. When you look at that disc with all of these constellations around it, every single one of those constellations is actually a celestial body. That is a real life map of our celestial body, or of our celestial reality that our planet is an honored member of. Our planet is part of this celestial dance through all of these, what we call celestial bodies or signs of the zodiac. And the ancients gave us great maps. The ancients knew what the path of this planet, of this entire solar system, would be through these amazing changes as we went through these different signs of the zodiac. Now, in the signs of the zodiac, and you can see this is a very interesting conversation when you look at what is available in our modern system science. I call it our modern system science and the science of the ancients, because our modern system scientists have been denied these maps that the ancients provided. And why they have been denied that, we should all be asking. And a lot of us are asking. And so I have great faith that one's going to become illuminated for no other better word than that. But these maps are very clear. They showed us forever what we're going to be doing. And what we're doing right now, from the celestial body perspective, is our entire solar system is going from, or our entire planet in the solar system, in our measurable Earth terms, is going from the Piscean galaxy to the Aquarian galaxy. And in this transition period, for an estimated 2,000 years or so, we are going to be traveling into what some call the photon belt. The photon belt is this an extraordinary expanse of what we would call light or expanded electromagnetic energy. It is a light source that I honestly cannot explain. All I can tell you at this exact moment is that I feel it. I personally see it with my eyes. I personally witness it affecting the flora and fauna around me. So this light source is not just the visible light. This light source is an electromagnetic energy source that promotes, it inspires, changes, transforms. It is a transforming energy. And I believe that this light source itself is the agent for transforming all of our DNA, RNA, every single biological, perhaps extraterrestrial as well, any DNA, RNA component, compound of life is going to be transformed if they hang out around here, because this photon belt is serious stuff, and this is serious in a playful way. It's really important to bring joy into this conversation, because joy is what the purpose of life is. This is fun. This is, it has a lot of components to it. Looking at this stuff can be very unnerving, because it's very challenges and it to our existed norms. It forces us to change. It forces us to look at ourselves. It forces us to be open. And it's very uncomfortable. It can be very scary, but it is our life. We have chosen this. So it must also retain its joy for the exploration, because you can't die, you know. You're going to just have to live with it, okay, so to speak. So why not enjoy the ride? Okay, that's where I'm going with this, that we can somehow become inspired enough to be with our fear when it comes up, be with the changes as they become way beyond our intellect to understand, because they are here and they are coming in faster and faster all the time. And there's no turning back, folks. There's no going back to the old this or the old that. There's no back there. There never really was, but that's not the conversation for today. Today, we are celebrating the new light energy coming on to the planet. I want to share with you my examples now of the Earth experience that I have been having of these two phenomena that are playing themselves out. And let's go back to the beach. Now, on the Revere Beach, in the last few years, I have been enjoying very much learning, being with the plovers. The plovers are little tiny birds. They are birds that migrate many hundred miles north and south along all of the face of America. Actually, what we call America now. The little plovers come to Revere Beach during their migration period in the summer, and they nest on Revere Beach in the dunes in the far northern parts. In the pattern of that I was experiencing from 2004 until 2010, and it was very consistent from 2004 to 2010, around April, May, the little plovers would start to show up, then they would mass, and then they would move to the northern part of the beach and move into the dunes, and they would lay their eggs, and we would meet the baby plovers. Many would hang out throughout the summer, and many would also leave. This is a very crude synopsis of the experience, but that was basically it. April, May, they would show up and mate, and we'd have lots of babies by June. They'd breed in two or three cycles. They wouldn't all come at once, like two or three cycles of baby plovers, and various groups would leave, and a few would stay back. And normally, up until 2010, the birds would leave the beach. Predominantly, I would see most all of them gone by October at the latest. They would be gone. Now, in 2010, there was a big change. That was the year, in the beginning of 2010, we all know that BP polluted all of the Gulf of Mexico. There were a lot of changes, but also this Gulf Stream was changing because the Earth was tilting. That was the beginning of this major tilt. And how I witnessed that major tilt, what really got my attention, was walking on the beach for all of those years. I noticed in all seasons the line of the shadows from the buildings that line up, that are along the wall that they created. There are a number of very tall buildings that cast shadows as the sun is moving. And those shadows make very specific lines on the beach. And they were very clear to me because I was studying them. I was actually using the shade. That was the only shade available. I was very aware of where those lines should be at all times. I watched them move. As I said, I was a regular walker on this beach at least once a week from 2004 until date to this date, with the exception of two winters when I was out of the state. So these things I learned by experience, by being present, by watching the lines, by, you know, not necessarily radically engaging my intellectual prowess on the whole thing, but just by gently observing and by paying attention, you know. So in 2010, the lines were moving. They were moving so dramatically that I got very concerned. And I really do understand that fear that comes up, because I was really wondering what the heck is happening. I got out my compass and I'm looking, I was like, where is this sun? Why is the sun setting over there when the sun is usually always setting here? And it really was very disturbing, very disturbing. And so I was watching this all throughout 2010, watching the sun literally move north as it set by my compass. And I'm thinking to myself, what is going on? And I see the moon shifting and things that I had never seen before, the moon going over the beach. I had never seen that in all the years that I had walked the beach. And it was very, very upsetting. It was very upsetting. It was like my routine, my beach. This is really crazy. What is going on? And I went through all of that, and I just kept going through it, and I kept asking questions, and I kept doing research, and I kept asking questions, and I kept talking to people. And that's why I'm such an advocate for developing this open dialogue, that unconditional love and respect and total honoring of everybody's experience, because that way we can all have our experience and nobody can feel better or worse than another, because it's just the experience. Okay, so that really kept me going. By 2011, by last year, when the solstice came last year, and this is important right now because the solstice is about to come again next week. We are June 16 by the Gregorian calendar. We are 28 in the 28th day of the lunation by my new calendar of healing and gratitude in the first year. And we are very close to the new moon on Tuesday, as well as the solstice, Thursday, I believe it's 21st. Well, what happened normal in the old season cycle was that the tilt of the earth on the solstice would literally be so kind to the beachgoers, because it literally would send the tide back a bit. It would create more beach. The tide would naturally go out. And then when the fall equinox would come, then the gentle tilt again would bring the beach, bring the water higher again. And it was very common that we would have storms, you know, over the walls and things in the winter months. But in the summer, also combined with the extra sand that they put on, very important, we have artificial manipulation going on right across the board. And these are my natural-based explorations. There are definitely artificial manipulations going on. And this is just not where I am choosing to focus this talk, but they are definitely happening. So back to the whole picture, though, with the solstice last year, with that, whatever might have happened, there was a tilt. I have to say, there was definitely a shift going on, but the water did not run out. The water line did not recede on the beach. The water line actually increased. And of course, it doesn't happen on the 19th, right, or the 21st. It's not like the light goes on. It's a process. So I have been watching it already this year. All right. So the line last year of the water line did not recede. The line actually increased toward the land. So it was very, very obvious that the water line was increasing throughout the entire summer. And I saw them putting so much sand and so much sand trying to save the beach, which they did. But the truth was they couldn't stop the water from coming out. Now, last year, in checking my sanity, literally, because when these changes happen and the amount of people that are paying attention was sparse in my community, I couldn't compare notes easily with people. I was left with my own vices, right? And the thing that I used to anchor my own sanity was the lifeguard chairs that they put out on the south end of the beach, where they're out all summer. And I knew very well where they had been gone, where they had gone. And they had been a good 100 yards or more out from the wall. Last summer, I watched them be moved up 3 times from the beach, from where they were back at 100 yards from the wall. They actually moved them 3 times. They ended up almost half the distance from the wall last year. And that really helped me a lot. And I offer that to you all who are independent scientists. And, you know, those little markers, those checks of reality really can be very, very helpful. And so look around, find yourself something that doesn't move all the time. You know, that helped me. I cannot tell you how much. I would go down to the beach and I'd be, oh my God, am I hallucinating this? No, look, they moved the chair. It was a simple thing, but it was real. The chair moved, and I knew it was moving because I knew where it was, and I knew I wasn't going to give myself a hard time about that. So I watched that last year. The plovers watched that last year. The plovers knew very, very well last year that their nesting ground was challenged. And I watched from 2010 the more plovers that I had personally witnessed came to the beach in 2010 than I had ever seen. I was in such a delight for so many months by the peep, 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 this, the beautiful song and the dance of the babies and the all that amazing beauty that goes with celebrating new life. And, oh, my God, just incredibly immersed, hours and hours. I was living at the beach at that time, and I was just immersed in the plover love dance. And then last year, the plovers actually did not come in mass. I have not seen a mass of plovers since on the beach. Now I'm talking 2012. In 2010, after that migration that was so astronomical, just phenomenal with all those babies, many of the plovers I noticed much more than the year before actually wintered over. They were here for that incredibly icy winter we had, and they were amazing to me how they adapted. I watched them get these really thick coats, and they really, a good number of them, by my estimation, based on what I had been observing on the beach, had looked like they did all right. They got what they needed. The good, you know, grace of the goddess provided their extra layers that, you know, we all need here when the weather gets cold. And they were okay. They didn't leave, which really caught my attention. And, or a lot of them didn't leave. And I was also tremendously relieved. But there they were. But they didn't come back in the regular sequence last year either. They did not start arriving in April and May. They didn't do that at all. The groups were very sparse. There were, rather than one big group massing, there were bands of plovers that seemed to be arriving together from different sects. And they did use the dunes for mating. There were very, very few, less than 10%, less, perhaps much less than 10% of the year before. And the water line was much higher. And the water line in the north end is a much more aggressive than in the south. So I noticed that and was, again, affirmed that I was not hallucinating. The water had changed, and I was not hallucinating that the bird migration had been affected. And I was not hallucinating that the weather pattern, that the Gulf Stream had been affected either, because of the water temperature. Being a beach walker for all these years, the water here is cold, although it's much colder in the Pacific. There, it is very cold, but it does sort of warm up throughout the season. And the warmth, the heat is gradual as you're walking on the beach from, you know, March, April with your bare feet. You can definitely feel it getting warmer as the summer months increase. And, you know, about September, you can have a really good swim by my standards, you know, September, October, it's like great. Well, this last year in 2011, that didn't happen. The water did not gradually change at all. We had very cold tides and we had very warm tides. And we had very cold tides during heat waves. We had some really strange stuff last year. That, to me, is another sign of the Gulf Stream changing. It has changed. It changed. Okay. It changed. All right. This year, the plovers have barely arrived. They didn't really come en masse at all. This year, I have seen total... The most I've seen are 5 plovers at once. And this was last week when I was there. I saw 2 parents and 3 babies in the far north end, in the dunes, tucked away in the high part of the dunes. Because what happened this year already, the water continuing to rise, the last solstice, or excuse me, the, remember just a couple weeks back, or 4 weeks back now, we had the solar eclipse, and we had the Venus transit, and we had radical sea activity here on the East Coast. Well, we had it on the beach too. And as I was walking on the beach last week, this is what I saw. Those chairs, those lifeguard chairs that I had mentioned were my markers of how the waterline was moving as my objective third-party perspective. Those chairs have now been placed within 10 feet of the wall. Within 10 feet of the wall is where all of the lifeguard chairs are placed now. Speaking this day, that is where they are today. Walking on the beach, I saw that those storms had rallied a tremendous amount of human concern and support. There is traditionally a rope around the areas where the plovers mate and have their babies in the northern dunes. However, with the increase of the tides and the obvious displacement of the entire migration going on, not just the plovers, I'm just focusing on the plovers, that there are several birds that migrate and do their thing out there. The tremendous compassion of humanity came out, and they ran these little cords around different areas of the dunes to encourage people to give space to all of the birds. And I was so heartened by that. I can't tell you how much I was so heartened by that, that so many people were not only concerned, but were paying attention, and they became proactive. They realized that these little birds were having a situation they could do nothing about, with their breeding place now being pummeled by water, and they got together and they made another safe space where humans could become part of that process as well. And be respectful and be observant and honor that beautiful cycle of life that happens there every year. And I was so heartened that it took away any angst or any frustration or anything about the fact that, you know, obviously we lost some serious amount of birds in that, you know. But it was okay because, look, look how humanity is growing. Look how humanity is noticing that we aren't the only thing here, that other lives are in the balance here, and that we can do beautiful things. We can come together and really help, really be part of the co-creation of life as we know it, to become part of the co-creation of the new life that is coming onto the planet, more and more and more and more. Humanity is coming to terms with its place in the multiverse. I am so excited about that. And I just saw that so clearly by the love and concern that just poured out to our migrating community out there here in rocky old Massachusetts. And if Massachusetts can get a heart, folks, anyone can get a heart. And I know that. I have this just unbreakable faith in the human potential that we are going to figure this out. We are figuring this out. We are growing in leaps and bounds. And I have great faith in each one of us that we will show up and do our part. Okay. Well, I have covered a lot of things and shared with you a lot of, you know, bits and pieces of my study that has been going on, continues to go on. I want to leave you in my last 10 minutes or so with this exercise. I want to share with you all something that I have discovered that has helped me really become more aware of this new light, the literal light that we can see, sense with our human capacity. And it goes like this. Now, you can do it anywhere. You know, I do it in the city. And the city does have street lights, but there are always little pockets where the street lights don't shine. And this requires your own commitment to getting to know your environment, your surroundings in the dark. Go ahead, go outside and make friends with some of those strangers in the dark. They may actually become friends in the dark. There is a tremendous wealth of life outside at night. And at night outside, there is always a place where you can find to make your place in the night. This is how I did it. I picked a place that I would visit, and I started noticing the light. The light was not directly affected by the streetlights, although being in the city, there were shadows from the different buildings that would be affected by the street lights. So I took all that in my study. You know, I just committed to getting to know this area, and you can too. So what happened in the last, you know, 2 years very, very strongly is that I started to notice that the light itself in the darkest place changed, but not so much like the another light was shining on it, but rather like a luminescence of all the life in it was starting to expand, that allowed me to view the detail of the ground, of the plants, that I could suddenly see in extraordinary detail in what was used to be the dead of night. And the best time to explore this is during a new moon, because there is no moon. So that is coming up this week. So if you are so inclined, you can start your study now and give yourself at least 3 months and a commitment to really get to know it. Because if you've never been outside, then you're not going to see anything different, right? You're just going to see it for the first time. And that's great. You are right on time, because it is only going to get brighter. There's nothing we can do to stop this. So it doesn't matter if you're starting now. In fact, it's great that you're starting now. So enjoy. Just start, right? So the process of learning it, what your area is, and then in the dead of night, during the new moon or whenever, you just start to notice if it's changing. How does it look to you? Now, for me, what I started to notice in my area was that I could see the perimeter of the garden itself. And I began to be able to make out the detail of certain plants and sculptures in the garden itself in the middle of the night. And now you can begin to start seeing this obvious change around midnight. Around midnight is when this luminescence really becomes palpable. You can really see it and sense it. And you can see it by looking up as well. You can see a light energy that covers the entire sky. It's much bigger than a sun light, which would be a very direct light that is more common. That's the light we've all known. The planet rotates into the light of the sun, which casts the light on the planet. And that's the light we've known. But we are now entering the photon belt, which is producing a light source that is all around, that is actually activating the light source within every living cell on the planet, including all of us. So that is the detail that I began to notice, the detail of everything on the ground. So look up and see what you see, and look down. And in the final note, I will leave you with that. It was just this morning. This is another thing I've noticed with the changes in the birds. At 3 a.m., the birds start their song. Quite often, it's between 3 and 4 a.m., I hear the birds begin their songs. And when the sun actually rose here at 5 o'clock, 5:07 to be exact, the birds are often quite quiet. Around the 5 o'clock area, the birds take a break. This is consistent. This seems to be a new pattern. So somewhere between 3 and 4 is when I hear a lot more bird chatter, right around the time the actual sun, our closest sun, is breaking. They seem to take a break, and then they resume, you know, around 7, 8. This seems to be the new pattern I've observed, and it might be different in your area, and I would love to know how different that is, because we're all in this together. And so this morning at 3 o'clock, I got up, and I said, all right, you know, I'm all excited. I'm going to talk to the good people on the broadcast about the light. I want to just go be with the light today. And I got up and I went outside. And sure enough, by 4 a.m., the whole backyard was so clear. I could see the blades of grass standing up on the porch at 4 a.m. Four, that's before the sun comes up, folks. Okay, this is how obvious it is becoming to our eye once we choose to cultivate that, once we choose to become aware of that. And I realize that if you've never spent time outside, that's just going to be normal to you. That's the way it is outside, and that's great. Well, just keep doing it, because it's going to get brighter. It is actually going to get much brighter. And I can't even imagine how that is, but I just know it's on the increase. So I really appreciate you all listening and taking time to hang with me. And I hope that this sharing has been illuminating, has been interesting, has been fun, has offered you something to enjoy or think about or discard if it didn't make any sense. And enough of that. That's all good. That is great. And so that brings us to our hour. So I am going to close now this very first broadcast of the Earth Talk, an open dialogue celebrating the Earth and our changes, because we are all in this together, and the Earth and us are one. So it has been absolutely a pleasure to share this time with you all, and I will return in a fortnight with Megan Nichol will be my guest next week, and then July, the new program rolls out. All right then, good people, until next time, please do take good care of yourselves and take good care of each other. We are all in this together, and it's going to get better from here. All right, bye-bye.